Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. I'm Mike Sweeney, and I'm here with Jesse Gaskell. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Sweeney.
Nice to see you.
Oh, you too.
Oh, man. What's going on? I haven't seen you in a bit.
I know. We're still striking.
Right.
And it's summer.
It is summer.
So, of course, I did take up a strike hobby.
Yes. What is that?
I'm learning how to play the accordion.
Is that true? I think it is true. Why would you make that up? Wow.
Yeah, not doing it for the accolades.
Well, is your goal to bring the accordion to a picket line and
we'll see. Pickers? It's a very hard instrument, it turns out.
It's incredibly hard.
It's two instruments.
Yes,
and
it's a keyboard, and then on the other side there are all those the dot candy buttons.
Yeah. It's really hard, but it's been fun. I mean, I can only play children's songs right now. I can play "Twinkle Twinkle Little Star" and "Mary Had a Little Lamb," and then the chorus of "Aha, Take on Me."
Oh wow, that's fantastic. That's kind of like a song for babies.
It is like a kid's song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I decided, I just had it in my head.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I kind of want to learn to play an instrument. And that seemed like something you could play by yourself. Obviously, in my dreams, I get to join a Zydeco band eventually.
Of course. A move to New Orleans. Well, that was my question. What is your musical instrument background? In other words, did you play an instrument in school?
I played piano for 2 years as a kid, and that's it.
Okay. Is that helping at all?
Yeah, a little bit.
All right.
I know how to read music. Oh. That helps a little.
But that's giant, I would think.
Yeah. But it's different between knowing what you're supposed to do and actually doing it.
Right. There was one Conan writer, Guy Nicolucci, played the accordion.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sure he was much better than me.
I only heard him play it once, and yeah, he was pretty good.
I forgot too how long it takes to get good at something, and it's really frustrating to be bad at it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm learning.
It's very humbling
with podcasting.
Shouldn't I be better by now?
I just tell myself baby steps. No, but an instrument is incredible. Oh my God. Do you play for your boyfriend? Is he like, oh, that's great. I love AHA.
Oh God, no. But I have my dog is home when I play the accordion and she hates it. She howls the whole time.
It's a duet.
I know. I sent a video to my mom and she thought that she was maybe singing, but I was like, she looks too pained.
She thought, that's such a mother thing. Like, no, darling, she's enjoying
it. She's singing to your beautiful music. Yeah. I know.
I
think she thinks that it's a fire engine or something.
She's baring her teeth and there's saliva dripping down. She loves it, honey.
So it is kind of, it's fun to troll the dog with the accordion.
Yeah. I would love it if the next time we record, if you would Even just play one. Like, I'd love to hear the dog howling and you playing the accordion. Is that
okay? Doable? Okay, I'll make that happen.
Oh my God, can you do it right now?
Well, no, but I have a video of it. Here, let me pull it up on my phone. Does it sound like she's singing or does she sound in pain?
It's a beautiful duet. I would pay to see you two in concert. Okay. But she seemed to stop when you stopped.
She does. Yeah. It's just the noise that makes her howl. And
listen, you're being way too modest. That was one of the best Itsy Bitsy spiders I've ever heard.
Does that from the moment I pick up the accordion until I stop. So I can't,
no matter what you're doing,
do it without her doing that.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Well, it's annoying.
Well, it's really annoying. I would get rid of the dog. Yeah. You can't let anything get in the way.
No, because I'm going to be an accordion star.
Yes, you are. Wow. Well, who could possibly top that?
Who could follow that? I can only think of one person in the world.
Yes.
And that's actor, comedian, and writer Sam Richardson.
Oh, my God. Thank God he's on the show today.
I know. Unfortunately, I actually couldn't make it for this interview. I was very sad to miss it. But you were there, Sweeney. You did great.
I did the best I could with my limited skills. But yes, when you're not there, I'm sad.
Aww.
And lonely. But I had a great time with Sam.
Well, what we didn't mention was that this entire season of Inside Conan, we're covering Conan on the road.
Right.
And that means Conan travel episodes, remotes, all the different events that took Conan away from the desk. And Sam, of course, came with us on the Conan Without Borders trip to Ghana. He actually introduced the idea.
Yeah. And it turns out he is of Ghanaian descent. And he used to mm-hmm. visit Ghana when he was like a preteen and in early teen years. And he hadn't been back since. And he's no dummy. He was getting a free trip to visit his homeland. And so it was...
Well, and it was actually part of Ghana's year of return, which was they were focusing on Black Americans who might have some Ghanaian ancestry and, you know, encouraging people to travel to visit the motherland.
And the Ghanaian government also coincidentally invited Conan to visit Ghana to help commemorate the year of return. And so it was a perfect team to visit the country.
It was. And Sam is just such a lovely person. He's a great, great person to travel with.
He was so much fun. He was so wonderful. And it was one of my most memorable trips because we got to meet Sam's family in Ghana. Mm-hmm. And that was an amazing insight to the country that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And his family, of course, they were all so lovely.
And don't move a muscle after that because we are talking to John Croteau, the longtime script supervisor for Conan, who went on the road on tour with Conan after The Tonight Show, and he's got some great stories. So without further ado, here's Sam Richardson.
Hey, we are here with the wonderful, hilarious, very talented Sam Richardson. I'm so happy to see you again.
Oh, so happy to see you.
Thank you for being on Inside Conan, the parasitic podcast that lives off the offal provided by Conan O'Brien. Well, listen, whatever you have to do to get through these hard times.
Yeah, exactly. It's an ecosystem.
No, but thank you so much for appearing. We're so happy. And there's a bit of a bait and switch because the co-host is normally Jesse Gaskell.
Oh, yes.
The wonderful Jesse Gaskell. Hilarious, wonderful, much smarter and more organized than me. But you're stuck with me. I apologize. But listen, how bad can it be?
Yeah, baby, you know, it's like the Huey Lewis song says, I'm happy to be stuck with you.
I wasn't sure which one you're
going to
be
pick. Square.
Yeah, you know? that too.
Back in time.
All of his songs timeless anthems.
It's true.
Well, thanks for coming in. And we just, you know, we have guests on, you know, have a big Conan connection, and we just kind of love to talk, explore that connection and, you know, see how it's affected you or not affected you at all. So I thought we'd start in the beginning with Conan, just your first appearance. Do you remember that? And I was wondering, had you been on a late night talk show prior to that?
If I'm recalling the first time properly, that's where I did a jumping splits.
Right.
And my, yeah.
Did you, did that cause injury?
No, luckily. Luckily.
No
physical, at least.
Background where you learned that you knew that's something you could do. What did you do that for?
I grew up doing martial arts. Taekwondo and Wing Chun Do and that sort of thing. So like,
it's that or cheerleading.
It's that or cheerleading.
I was waiting for you
exactly.
to go. Yeah, right.
I mean, that move seems more cheerleading than than martial arts than Taekwondo.
Right.
But they're similar.
Although that would throw off your enemy, I think. Like if you do that, that would make me stop, and then you could like chop them in the nuts or something.
Exactly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, you do that move, everybody is distracted and pause a second, then you wrap them up. Yeah.
What is that move have a name in Taekwondo?
That move is
leg split.
It's like a leg split. Yeah. It's just like jumping splits kick.
Had you pulled that out before? Is that like a trick, you know, you've got like up your sleeve?
It is. Like when I got to high school, I showed that I started doing musicals, and it was so funny. Like, I was doing it in when we were like warming up and the dance choreographer was like, "Whoa, what's that?" And so then like, it became my trick. And every musical, I would like do a jumping toe touch, or I'd do a jumping toe touch off of a platform or something. So it was a jumping splits kick became a jumping toe touch.
Right. No matter what the musical, right?
You know, okay. It's like truly, we're doing like
he's
Rent.
Doing it in Rent, right?
You know. It's like,
they just found out they can stay in the apartment.
Like, yeah, jumping toe touch. She's dying. Jumping toe touch.
What was your favorite musical you did?
My favorite musical I did was, I really enjoyed Damn Yankees.
Yeah.
It was like, that was like the first musical I did. Or yeah. I did that or West Side Story. But I didn't enjoy West Side Story very much because, you know, the premise being it's the white kids versus the Puerto Ricans.
Right.
So if you're not either of those, if you're not white, then you are Puerto Rican, period.
I'm Officer Krupke, I
you
guess.
Know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So I was lucky. I was Chino, but I was definitely like, they didn't get any fun songs. really, they are tertiary characters.
Right.
That was my first encounter with racism in the entertainment industry.
You wrote an angry letter.
I really
to
did.
Leonard Bernstein. What the hell were you
it's like,
thinking?
Get woke.
It's all a sham. I didn't know you sang. That's kind of awesome. Does that come up? Like
here and there. I'd love to sing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've done anything professionally singing.
Your voice is hard to peg. You could be a beautiful bass baritone or a tenor. It's very hard.
It's true. You know, I can hit all of them.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I can hit all of them.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's...
you can do all the parts.
All of them.
And then
all
the split.
Of them. And then I do a jumping toe touch. If you're only listening, but you can't tell. I was doing jumping toe touches the whole time.
Three jumping toe touches, even though you only sang two voices.
Yep.
You
threw it was like one in between.
Well, you put English on it.
Exactly.
I was in a high school musical, Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
But it was like for Sunday school. So it was really the bottom of the barrel. Yeah. And they had no money. And they begged me to go out for it because I played the bad guy, Judd.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember the guy who played Curly, like I was already 6'3", and the guy who played Curly was like 5'2".
Uh-oh.
And he had to, so I you reminded me, you said choreography. They had to choreograph him killing me. And I remember they're like, okay, give us a minute here.
Can we like a chair he pulls up?
it was a thing where I had to stumble and accidentally fall on his knife.
Oh,
So
the audience is booing. It's like, no. You've asked us to suspend our belief too much.
Can he do a split? No.
There's no way he wins this fight.
This guy blows. So that was my big, yeah. I was like, I don't know if musical theater's for me.
Oh.
But wait, how do we got on to, oh yes, High School Musicals.
Oh yes,
and
yes.
And then that's where the split came into its own. Yeah. I love it.
The origin story of the split.
And then you're like, someday I'll do this on a late night talk show.
Yeah, first chance I got, right. Really.
So you were on Conan, and then and that was great. And well, you know what? Just before we get back to Conan, I'm fascinated by, you know, you grew up in the Detroit area, mm-hmm. and I love that you went into improv. I'm wondering if you ever did even thought about doing stand up, or you just or did it a little bit, or I'm just curious.
It was always improv because so I grew up watching, you know, a lot of Saturday Night Live and SCTV.
Yeah.
And like, you know, all the movies that, you know, those people were in. So like, there was just like on repeat. Mm-hmm. And so finding out there was a Second City, or finding out what Second City was, I was like enamored. And then I found out there was a Second City in Detroit.
Right.
So then I went to see Second City in Detroit and I was like 14.
Ah.
And so I started doing improv. Then I like did an improv jam and then got on stage and like got some laughs and I was like, uh-oh. So like it was all about improv and sketch.
When you were 14?
When I was like 14, 15.
So you saw a show and then went back another time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw my friend's class show.
Okay.
A friend who I was in musicals with.
Yeah.
Was taking classes at Second City. And so I went to see his show and then they had like an improv jam afterward, and so I got up and I did the jam.
Oh wow!
You know, just like a teenager who has no idea
the risk involved.
Exactly. I was like, yeah, it's easy.
The way to do it.
And like, I had a good pop, and I was like, whoa!
Oh boy,
this is it from here on out.
That first big laugh.
That was 4 years ago.
I don't need that leg split anymore.
You know what I mean?
I can save my groin for other things.
Exactly.
So did your parents have a sense of like, oh, you know what?
Not entirely.
Showbiz maybe for this guy.
You know, like my dad is a pretty good patron of the arts. You know, he's like into opera and, you know, shows. He took me to see my first musical, which was Dreamgirls. And so like he was like always like, oh, I appreciate this.
But
it was always very much a hobby, quote unquote.
Right,
but to
me,
it wasn't. I was like, this is what it's going to be.
Right.
So when he got in after high school, I was like looking at schools. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go to theater school. So I almost went to U of M, but my grades weren't good. you have to like audition for the theater program. I think it was very complicated. So I went to Wayne State University and got in their theater program. But I was also still involved at Second City and doing shows in like around Detroit, written through improv and kind of like local theater. So I was like managing both.
And that's how you met Tim Robinson, right?
Yes.
He was your instructor in a class?
He was my level A instructor when I was like 18 years old.
That old?
Yeah, I was with a walker, long gray beard.
Four years later.
4 years, just arthritic improv.
Right. How big was the class?
That class was maybe about 16 people, you know?
Did he tell everyone else to go home?
He was like, everybody, fuck off.
Sorry, I just want to hang out with this guy.
This guy is it.
Yeah. By the way, Detroiters is laugh out loud, hilarious show. And
thank you.
You two are like, this sounds corny, but I think you're like one of the great comedy duos.
Thank you.
You probably hear that a lot, but man, oh man, you two are so just great together. And I just laugh out loud, hilarious show.
It's such a rare thing to find, you know, a person who you blend with comedically so perfectly.
Right.
And we found that so early and like, and not just comedically, but just like as friends, you know what I mean? But because it's such a part of ourselves, the fact that those parts meld well means the other parts do as well. And like we both have like sort of the same sort of outlook on things.
Right.
So, lock and step.
And then you have that shorthand.
And then we have, exactly.
So then like you kind of need that, I think, too, because it's in a way, I mean, there's probably times where it's you guys against the world or just other outside forces are like, we got to cut this or no, we don't really like that. And and you look at each other and probably go, oh, no,
this is actually what the thing is. Trust me.
No, being in Detroit is kind of important. We're not.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not moving it to Iowa. Little things like that.
Yeah, like, well, that's so funny because like also, you know, in the notes session when we're like pitching it and like kind of making the show early on, there was like a lot of like pushback on like, oh, these guys need to be in more conflict. We're like, well, no, this is the bit is it's these guys versus the world, the internal conflict. You see that everywhere. And like you can have it's there's so many forces that are at play. Like it's important that these guys are, you know, that they have each other no matter what, you know? And then when there is conflict between them, that's what would shake up the world.
Right,
you know? So
right.
It can't be every episode that's that because then why do they love and trust each other so much?
I love that story because that seems like a classic executive thing. Like, well, it's like a playbook. There's got to be conflict. And you're right. Like you two, I mean, I think that's why you two are so hilarious. You're both on the same wavelength. It's like, oh, we're gonna put ketchup on our ties before we go into a restaurant.
And it's unspoken. We know it already.
It's just that's what you do before a big meeting. Okay. And it's just hilarious.
And like one of my favorite like kind of bits that we would do in there is like, you know, if Tim is saying something to someone that's like just out of pocket, you know, and he's like like he's talking to the reverend at the funeral afterwards. And he's like, oh, I hope you didn't think what you did there was like very funny. Those were all priest laughs. They're gonna laugh no matter what. And like, it's like, whoa, out of pocket, out of hand. And then like, I come up later. I'm like, oh, great job. I hope you know you didn't like deserve those laughs. It's this, you know, they agree on everything.
Right.
So it's, you didn't expect it.
Well, it's hilarious. But then it's true when you guys do disagree, like when he's being a bad wingman or or you don't like the way he's doing an ad and then you end up doing it. Those are really fun surprises.
Yeah. That's the conflict. You can't have conflict if it's always conflict.
Right. Yeah. I mean, some people attempt it, but then you're just, it's exhausting.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's really funny. Well, I hope you didn't get any notes when you appeared on Conan.
None. Not a one. No. Nobody even talked to me.
Oh, no one cared about our show ever. I always love when people are like, well, you guys, you know, you guys are getting fucked by the executive. I'm just like, I wish we could say that. Excuse, that would have helped perhaps. But no, it was all, I think because Conan's such a strong comedic like point of view.
Yes.
And very large and in charge that because I noticed it, I mean, I came into late night. And it was like that. But then going to the Tonight Show and then going to Conan on TBS and just when he's hosted the Emmys or anything, everyone backs off. They're just like, oh, okay.
Like
we're not messing with this. Like he knows what he's doing.
He knows. He's the funniest man on television.
But he also knows to kind of establish that
right
with them. Like he's smart enough to know, like, okay, all these guys and women are going to be, you know, they're going to want to have their own agenda and push.
And so, like, at least get a hand on something so they can say they did something.
Yes. You
know, have a reason to have been there.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he'd make a strong, I think, he'd come out of the gate where I was like, wow, he would just say, this is what we're doing, blah, 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 blah. And then everyone would be like,
oh, yeah, right.
We'll talk to you in 10 years. Good luck with your show.
Mm-hmm.
And all your guest segments. So.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
This season this is our fourth season. We're talking about Conan on the road. We're talking about Conan traveling, like either to cities in the United States or some, his travel shows. So of course we wanted to talk to you because That was one of our favorite international travel shows, was going to Ghana with you.
It was so amazing. It was such an honor to get to go with you guys. And it was true because I hadn't been back to Ghana in so long.
Right.
With working, you never want to take yourself out of the possibility of working. So it's like, if I go to Ghana, that's when Spielberg's going to call and be like,
right,
be the new E.T.
Right. Sorry, man.
Can't.
I'm in a marketing god.
But one of my first things of comedy, like that same like little TV I was watching SNL on, and all this, I was watching Conan. Mm-hmm. I watched Conan's first episode like live. I was in my room on this little TV.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, so it's always been, I remember it.
Yeah.
So like for being on the show, I was like, this is wild. But then like, then being like a repeat guest, I was like, oh, that's right. Crazy to me. So then when you all asked me to come to Ghana, it was like the best opportunity and the like best way to go and like best people to go with.
Yeah. It just worked out that
it really did.
No, and of course we're like, oh, because we knew you knew how busy you were. And we're like, ah. And when you said yes, we're like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. This is great. Oh. We were so excited. And then it's funny, you say it was like a privilege or whatever to go with us. Ha ha. For us, like going there and then meeting your family.
Yeah.
And your extended family, your cousins and your aunt Letitia and your mom Lydia. And, that was amazing for us. And that was a real honor because it was such a great, much more intimate way to visit a country.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yes. And they were so happy to have you to like the, you know, the red carpet full. They were so excited. And I really appreciated how much you all appreciated it too.
Oh.
You know?
Well, I mean... You know, we flew up to Kumasi at one point to meet the Queen Mother. And that's where I think it's the first time I met your cousins, John. Uh-huh. And I loved your cousin, William.
Yes.
John's fine. Yeah. But does he live in London, I think?
He lives in London.
Did he grow up in Ghana or did he grow up in London?
So for everybody but me, they kind of split time. So they would either go to boarding school in London or they'd go to the GIS, Ghana International School, kind of between the two. So I was the only one who, I mean, I did go to school in Ghana for like first and second grade.
Oh,
I went
to
Lincoln Community School, which is like an international school. But everybody else kind of like was there, at school and they're all year long, or they would be in London for school and then be in Ghana the rest of the time.
Right.
You know, I was there for first and second grade when our grandfather was passing and then after he passed, but then I came back to the States and it was so funny because like, that's when everybody became like really Ghanaian was over the years. But for me, I was like not there.
Right, right.
So like 1 year I went back and all of a sudden everybody spoke Chui and I didn't, I was the only one who didn't. And I was like, oh, what?
Hey, you guys left without me.
You guys keep on, what's happening? And then they just like, kind of like, then further like separates, you
well,
know?
Yeah. You know? If you can't speak the language all of a sudden.
Quite literally.
I'm sure they lorded that over you. I'm sure. Oh, they must have tortured you.
Yes.
I would have, if you were my cousin.
You know?
We got him right where we want him.
Like already the one who has like the American accent. So, you know, they all have like their, everybody in my family has an English accent with a Ghanaian affectation.
Okay.
I'm the one who has just an American accent.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Oh my God. Would they do imitations of you? Probably?
They would. Oh my God. Everyone did. Even my auntie. They would like make fun of me. They'd be like, I'm thirsty. Can I have, what's this? It's clear. It's this, I'm like, oh, you want a water? Water.
Oh, they.
It's water. It's water.
They beat you. They
would
bait
me
it.
And I would fall for it because I was a child.
And you thought they.
Butter. That was the main one.
Oh, butter.
Get some butter. Butter. Stupid. It's butter.
I I love your aunt going after you.
Yeah, he's gonna help it.
They're probably like, what room is he in? Okay, watch this.
What time is it? 3 a.m? Wake him up. This is gonna be great.
He's really off his game. If you wake him, rock him awake.
Trust me, he'll say anything and he'll hit that hard R. Different meaning at that time. But I was also like my aunt's favorite. I mean, I still am. Even my cousins admit, like, I'm my aunt's favorite.
Oh, really?
By far.
And you were back then.
I was back then. I am now.
You were absence because you weren't around.
You know, you exactly.
You
know,
why like, can't you different. Be more like Sam?
You know, oh, Sam's here. Okay, wonderful. Even like Julian, my cousin Julian, who wasn't there, but that's Julian's William's younger brother.
Okay.
And Madeline, they're like, there's no even question about it. Your mom's favorite. You know, and I'm like, yeah, I know.
Oh, that's great. That's
anytime.
Great. Oh, so that must have been so you hadn't seen her or your cousins in quite a while. When you went back with us.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I knew you hadn't been since like early high school or eighth grade or something. But
exactly. It'd been since.
I didn't know they liked you. So I didn't know it was a
big. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know they'd be excited.
I thought I was a stranger.
Right.
But turns out it was just I hadn't been.
They still loved you. They did. Oh, that's great.
But it was so great because like at night, or sorry, day, we would do the segments.
Right.
And it was so much fun.
Right.
And then at night, I would go and I would hang out with my cousins. And it was as if no time had passed. You know, it was just like right along the side. But all of a sudden, we're adults, so we can just go and drink. And stuff.
That's even better.
You know?
Your so aunt's there.
Right?
Set these boys up.
Here we go.
See, I would be, and I love that you didn't, you know, weren't care, like, oh, who cares about the thing I'm doing during the day? I'm going out.
Yeah. With
my, that's kind of great.
You know, still at that like that point where I'm like, oh, I've got the bandwidth to do both.
Right. Yeah. Well, the Conan stuff wasn't exactly grueling, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
All except for that cooking duck.
Oh my goodness!
I had forgotten.
Mama Ama.
Mama Brown.
Mama Brown's Kitchen. Yeah,
and she. I just remember her show started, and we had to cool our jets while she did like a 20 or a half hour opening where she mentioned every product, every sponsor.
Every single one in detail.
Right. And I think it was like, hey, you know, can we get, no, I've got to mention the people make my refrigerator, my stovetop, my olive oil.
The specific bouillon cube.
Oh, it was so funny.
Yeah.
And then you and Conan got her to like, I think, start mentioning more.
More things.
Yeah, more products.
Yeah.
And she didn't even blink.
Yeah.
She didn't care whether you were joking or not.
No, he's like, I'll say all these products again.
Yeah, exactly.
I get two checks that way.
No, that was great. And, you know, the big highlight that's not on the show is the last day your family had us over for, and they're like, oh, come by. I mean, come by. And it's a feast.
A feast.
A feast. And I ate everything. It was a feast.
Yeah.
It was like a whole roasted fish. And
it's
just
a thing. Like they did like a pig, right?
Right.
And then like duck.
Yes. I took the pig with me on the airplane.
Yeah. It stunk on that, in that cabin, but it was delicious.
I knew not to bring the fish on the
cabin. Yeah.
That's experience. Travel. International traveler. So, exactly. Yes. And, you know, after that, I'm watching season 2 of Ted Lasso. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And then you came on and you were playing a billionaire from Ghana. And I don't know. I was so excited. I was delighted by it.
Yeah.
I was like, that maybe our trip helped with his research for the character.
It kind of did. Because I did meet like a kind of an Edwin Akufo when I was there.
Really?
You know, I won't say his name.
No.
But like
Akufo Edwin.
Exactly. Yeah. But he, you know, like sort of like this like very wealthy guy who's like tossing money around and like really trying to impress people. I was like, ooh, yeah. Write that.
Oh, I love that.
Put that in my brain. And then so like when they asked me if I would come and do Ted Lasso, I was like, oh, I know exactly who this is.
Oh, that's great. You know? And then you came back in season 3, which is great.
Yeah. It was really fun to get to go back and do that. And like this time, you know, the season 2, it's 2 episodes. So the first episode and a half, he's still pretending to be this benevolent sort of like, you know, I don't believe in billionaires. Right. Nobody should be a billionaire. We shouldn't exist.
Right.
And, you know, I want this great thing for you and for this. And then, you know, he's just trying to collect toys. And then when he's turned down, you know.
Yes.
Like that temper tantrum. So it was fun to get to come back post temper tantrum. And the whole time now he's this antagonistic, jerk.
Which really builds up at the end. I never knew that Sam, the character of Sam, was based on you, because your friend John Kelly was one of the creators.
Joe Kelly was co-creator of Detroiters.
Right.
And Jason was an executive producer on Detroiters. Jason Sudeikis. Yeah.
And was in Detroiters.
And was in Detroiters.
Great.
It's Carter Grant.
Yes, so great. Great as that character.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I love the way he would just stare at you guys, just like before answering.
Yeah, like those moments, like it would give those perfect pauses. Like, are you done?
Perfect pauses.
You know.
So Joe Kelly and you reached out to him and said, "Wait a minute,"
because I was like maybe like two or three episodes in, and I was like, hey, buddy, because you never want to just like assume like anybody named Sam has got to be me. But it was like enough things. It was like, he's just like affable, buoyant sort of guy.
Right.
He's Nigerian, but like, you know, close to Ghanaian.
Right. Does leg splits.
Does leg splits all the time and sings.
The signs are there.
In every octave. and I was like, hey, buddy, great. The show is great. Is Sam me? And he's like, oh, of course, buddy. Yeah, obviously. I guess it is obvious.
That's hilarious. So am I going to see any money from this?
Yeah.
Can you check?
This is a cease and desist.
Right. This isn't a friendly phone call.
Yeah, exactly. On the line is also my lawyer.
This is the other side of my personality. You can maybe use that for a different character you're going to rip me off for next season.
Exactly.
Prick. That's great. Plus, you got to go to, I assume you went to London, right? They didn't shoot
London.
That'd be great if you revealed they shot the whole thing in Warner Brothers.
Exactly. Just one background. Really? All green screen.
Right.
But so, I got to go to London. I got to see my cousins again.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
My Aunt Letitia. I got to London. I quarantined in the hotel for 9 days or maybe two. It was 2 weeks. It couldn't have been 2 weeks, but I don't know. It was long enough that all the days unmade themselves. And then I shot.
And this pre-COVID. That was just the way.
It was just because
that was the way you were. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just don't like people.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, people can't see now, but you're in a separate room.
Exactly. And in
behind a glass
bubble.
Booth.
And hazmat suit.
So you quarantined.
I quarantined, and then I went with my my cousins took me out, and then I went to see my Auntie Letitia, but it was a surprise. She didn't know I was in town, so she was in the back room. I came in as pretending to be a construction worker or a contractor. And I'm like, oh, well, can't do this, man. It's got the wall's got to come out. It can't come out. It's load bearing. And she's like, who is this? So she came out and she screamed. She's like, Sam!
That's great.
And I was like, who is this Cockney guy? Not a great accent, but.
Who says butter, but with an American accent?
She's a really hard R on that butter. I know that R.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Nice surprise.
And now this is super exciting because you're in After Party.
Yes.
Which I loved.
Oh, thank you.
Go ahead.
No, please.
No. Oh, please, more compliments.
Yeah, no, I keep them coming.
Right. No, but you know what? That was like a great ensemble cast. Really great. But again, I'm very partial to you. I'm like your Aunt Letitia. It's like, it's my Sam. No, but I just like you're just star of that show. But also, you know, it's such a perfect, I think, for all your talents, because each episode is from a different point of view and a different genre.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like you're so versatile in terms of, like, if someone came in here right now and asked you to do an interview in 10 different genres, you'd be like, yeah, what are they?
Sure, okay. Let's do them.
No, you don't have to. I don't need to see them in advance. You just do it. So yeah. Did you enjoy that?
I really loved it. Cause like, yeah, the sort of like the premise of the show being that everybody's like recalling, like talking to a detective to recall the events of a night right. of a murder. And then everybody's, retelling is told through a different genre of film and like through their right. different perspective, like sort of Rashomon style.
Yeah.
So like with that, the fun of sort of interpreting what their point of view is of how you see this character, but also like to like really dive into the tropes and the genres of
right. yes.
these things.
Yes.
It's really like a fertile playground.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you just
yeah.
It's fun to get to like do an action movie or then like in this one, like Elizabethan drama,
right.
you know,
right.
And like really you get to play pretend like all in the same time. So as opposed to like doing a whole other production that, you know, five right. months to right. to then put this, you can paint these different like, you know, coats of paint on your character
right, right.
and then like put that aside and then do another one immediately. It's like for a person like me, who's like always wanting to do something, it's like a perfect
right. activity. Yeah.
yeah
like,
you know.
Activity playpen. Oh, that makes me think of something I'm curious about. So, you know, like a lot of the scenes take place at this, you know, fantastic penthouse State. on the ocean, but also at a high school because it's a high school reunion. Mm-hmm. Like, so the high school reunion shots, would you just be camped out at that high school and shoot all the episodes and all the different genres before leaving that location?
Yes. So for the first season, it was the high school reunion. So we had a set for the house, but then we were in the actual high school. I think we're in Monrovia. So we would shoot all the episodes,
right.
you know, and all the stuff that was at the high school, we would shoot in the high school. So the first half of shooting was at that high school. And like, you know, oftentimes, you know, Chris Miller directed all the episodes at first season.
Uh-huh.
So you would go back and like kind of do the other genres.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So like the first one would be like, all right, we're doing this scene in the rom-com style. But then you change the lightings and then do it in action movie style.
Yeah.
You know, and this scene again, because it's all set up to be this
right.
already.
Right.
And then we would shoot all the house stuff together, and then like the wow. exteriors stuff, like the very last week.
Did you ever get shell shocked? Like keeping it.
It was hard.
Yeah, that's a lot to keep track of.
It really is, and like the fun thing would be when you would do the stuff back to back, because you could like really turn the dials, because you can like remember right. exactly what you'd done before.
Right.
You know, and
it
but
was
also
fresh.
It's fresh, you know, but also Chris. It's such a marvel because like, he keeps it all in his head, so you can ask him. It's like, well, wait. What was I doing here? He's like, oh, yeah, this because of this and this and this and this and this. It's like he's got all the
he had it right there in his frontal lobe.
All right there in his head is wild. He'd been with this for like 10 years. He originally had written it as a movie.
Oh.
And then they turned into a show because, like, you know, as a movie, you probably can't serve
yeah,
all the
yeah,
characters.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes eight episodes. Like, everybody gets their point of view across very clearly.
Yes.
As a movie, it'd probably been like, you know, 6 minutes with
yes.
each person. So for the second season, the season that comes out July 12th on Apple TV Plus, comes, we shot it. There's many directors, I believe five different directors
okay.
in 10 episodes. So, you know, we would be shooting two episodes at a time. So cross shooting, but not, you know, you wouldn't be doing 10. You'd know that you were on the hook for episodes one and episode five, you know
uh-huh.
what I mean? Or episode two and four.
Right.
You know, so like it's great to like be able to narrow that down and like really focus.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're also shooting it out of order.
Right.
So I'm like, we're shooting episode five, but we haven't done three yet. What did I do in three?
Right.
You know?
Right. And they'd be like, I don't know.
I don't know. It's not
I'm
my job.
I'm only directing two fuckface.
Yeah, my face. And shoved me really hard in the chest.
I don't think that's a good
head.
Way to. I'm surprised they had that director.
Yeah, now that I'm remembering.
Back.
This is a problem. I file a grievance.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah, at least the first season, one guy had it all.
You know?
In his, but that does sound even more complicated.
And the scope of everything is grown so much in the second season. You
right.
know? So, like, what was in the first season.
It's
was,
a wedding now.
It's a wedding.
Right.
You know, and it takes place over the, first off, the event takes place over the course of a weekend. But now with this one, you're meeting new characters.
Right.
So there's backstory
right.
that's being told over the course of, you know, some of them, you know, decades. And
yeah.
like these great, like, depending on the genre, these sort of like, you know.
Right, right. right.
Big narratives.
Right.
So with the scale being bigger and like it's more of a challenge, but a fun challenge to kind of get to do those things.
And you're the star again. No, but seriously, I think it's great because it is it's pretty. I was wondering, I was like, how are they going to bring back a lot of these people? Like, that just seems problematic. And then I saw the trailer and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
A lot of new people, which makes sense.
Almost all new people, except for myself, Zoe Chow, and Tiffany Haddish.
Yes. And Zach Woods is in it.
Woods is in it, who's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I saw him at UCB once. You know, like, I was there. It was just an improv show. And, you know, I knew him from Silicon Valley. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love him in Silicon Valley. But wow, was he great. I walked out there like, you ever see somebody perform and you're just like, I'm their fan for life. If anyone ever says anything bad, I will fight them. I will fight because...
Yeah.
You know, I just was like, oh, he's great.
Top tier talent. Like, I remember I was like, I know Zach Woods. I know, I've seen him. Oh, he's very funny. But I saw him do a UCB show.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this guy's a titan. Because, like, it's unfair. For him, it's unfair because first off, he's hyper intelligent. You know? His reference level and, like, his verbiage, all these things are just at the... you know, highest level.
It
but then he's
crazy.
Also bone funny. Like it's like, you don't get to be smart and and like dumb funny, but he's both. And it's unfair.
It is very, you know, I've just turned against him.
Yeah.
I want to get him now. I don't want to defend him.
Yeah.
He should be destroyed. No, I had the same reaction. You're right. He had all these great references, but was hilarious.
It was hilarious because, like, usually, you know, an improviser, you know, like, he sort of becomes a crutch. Like, usually they stand still and, like, sort of spout out these funny things or funny references.
Right.
But then you're not.
And it's not super organic.
It's not organic, but he's able to do that and be organic and be present thing. You're like, oh, how is it? Oh, it's not fair. Be dumb like me.
I don't think I want to work with you.
Oh, he's terrific. But everybody, you know, Anna Conkle is so funny in this show. And Paul Walter Hauser is truly magnificent. Everyone.
Oh, good. Well, yes, I picked him out, but everyone looks great, and I'm excited to watch it. Yeah. I love the first one. I thought it was such a great idea, and I bet you the creator, like, when it switched from being I'm talking about season one, from a movie to a TV show, he's probably almost like a eureka moment where
I think,
like,
so.
The way you're saying, oh, I can really.
Just
expand.
Give everything
idea.
Its time, you know, like fully realize these stories and, like, really give these characters each their perspective.
Right.
And then so let's the audience also sit with this character and, like, really invest themselves in them.
Right.
Which is great for a murder mystery because now, you know, everybody's a suspect. But then, like, if you empathize with them, you don't want anybody to be the one who did it. But then you know somebody had to.
Right.
You know?
Which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for appearing. This is great. Yes. It was really great to see you again.
Oh, it's been so much fun. It's so wonderful to see you.
Okay.
Yeah, truly. Thanks.
Thanks again to Sam Richardson for joining us. And don't forget, season 2 of the hilarious The After Party is premiering July 12th on Apple TV Plus. So be sure to seriously check it out.
Yeah. I honestly usually don't listen to you when you tell me to watch things, but this one I am going to watch.
I never tell you.
Just kidding. You give good, advice.
I do. Go home and watch all your accordion videos. And that's an order.
And now we also have another special treat for you because in lieu of a listener question, we sat down with our script supervisor, longtime Conan script supervisor, John Croteau. So here's John. Well, hey, thanks for coming to our podcast, John Croteau.
Hi, John.
I'm a fan of Inside Conan.
Wait, really?
I'm a listener.
You listen?
Yeah, haven't missed one.
Can we do medical experiments on you and find out what's going on?
John, we want to tell the listeners what your role was at the show. You were at the show for a long time.
Yes.
And John, you went to, I mean, you were always on the road with the show. You really were an indispensable part of the show. Did you, first of all, were you ever sick? I mean, did you ever call in sick? I don't even know what we would have done if you had.
No, I never missed a day.
You never missed a day.
Not once. I had, what do you call it when you get bit by a tick?
Lyme disease?
Lyme disease.
I had Lyme disease.
What?
And,
oh, no.
And I had 104 fever. And I was just sitting in the control room with my sweatshirt pulled over my head. And I was, oh, that was so miserable. Wait,
where was this?
That was it, late night in New York.
Wow.
I'd gone tubing that weekend. Yeah.
Well, wow. And you were there, now you're speaking of late night, you were there for a lot of the Clutch Cargos. Which,
yes,
those were the moving, you know, the live lips on a kind of a static photo of a celebrity. And we would usually start gang writing those the night before and then revise it in the morning and then rehearse it. And then there'd be usually a lot of changes. And that, don't you think that, I mean, that's the latest we'd ever start was because of the rewrites for those.
No. Not the latest you'd ever start. You've mentioned it before.
Oh.
Jeff and Conan started at the moment the show started, regardless of anything else that was happening.
Right.
Like it, one time.
Sometimes they'd push it, like they'd be like, oh,
5 minutes.
Well, you know what? For a while there, they'd give like, okay, we'll give you 5 minutes or something. But then you're right. Then it was like, you know what? We're starting on time regardless.
I remember the first time that it happened where I was reading over cue cards and Jeff Ross said, are you going to be ready? And I said, no. And he said, well, tough. I thought he was looking for information to make a decision. Yeah. And he was like, no.
Right.
He was just letting you know, like, well, you're not.
He was just making idle chit chat.
Because the show would start, the band would be playing,
yeah,
and Robert would be handwriting changes,
right,
to those cargos.
Yeah.
And you'd think like, okay, I have 7 minutes,
right,
to the show is going and I've got 7 minutes to get this out to the director.
Right. Because he's probably thinking, oh, I just have to finish this before the show starts. But then you still have all these things to do once he's done.
Right.
Yeah. And the show had started. Conan was doing his monologue.
Oh my God.
I remember a few times.
Absolutely. And he'd be doing the changes right on with the other cue card guy.
Mm-hmm.
Those were my favorite times when things were still being worked on while Conan was doing the monologue. A lot of times it would be editing of a pre-tape bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just be glaring at Steve, the stage manager, because he has to give me the thumbs up when the tape was up from editing, mm-hmm, the machine. And
yes,
a lot of times, like, Conan would be doing his last joke in the monologue and I'd be like, oh, I still haven't gotten the thumbs up. And then it would be like while Conan was walking over from the monologue to the desk. thumbs up. It always came through though. Always done.
But you know, Sweeney, I've been called a Sweeney apologist. And
all my detractors. That sounds like an exhausting full-time job.
And I loved it. And but I did learn from you. You even said recently, a couple years ago, when we were screening one of the Conan Without Borders, and there was about 2 minutes left, and people were all mad at you. Why isn't this ready to air? You know, we're going to screen it. And you said, well, if I was given this amount of time, wouldn't I take all of the time given? And so where I've worked subsequently, people are so irritated with me because they're like, well, why isn't it done yet? And I'm like, we're still... There's always time to work on it.
Yeah.
I like...
Do you want a worse product?
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like you're just describing a procrastinator.
No.
Well, yeah. It was... I was always impressed, John. I mean, you had the difficult job of managing, keeping track of the changes. And you had a lot of people... I mean, especially with the writers, like sometimes we would go off and make changes on a different version of the script. And you had to always keep track of what was the most recent and correct change. I mean, did you have issues with like writers just sending you something kind of going rogue or going around you, or did people kind of eventually figure out the system?
No one ever changed. like I respected every one of you, and each one of you getting to know your personalities were different. Where that was part of the job was, I won't name names, but if someone in the morning said, "All right, I'm definitely going to do this," and you'd think, they're not going to do that. Like, I don't have to spend energy prepping for that because I know them and they're going to do this other thing. Or someone who, I think that was part of it was, and I wouldn't notice that was happening until we had, we'd have great interns come in and work with the script department every semester. And they would hear someone say, "This is happening." And they'd say, "Why aren't we doing that?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's not going to happen." And that was, I think that was part of it, was knowing the rhythm of each person.
Mm-hmm.
Which I liked. I liked working with you all very much.
Yeah. Well, but, and you just had a steel trap mind. Like there were so many times, like a lot of times there'd be so many changes and, you know, I'd be going through it and I'd forget some of the change and you'd be like, you know, that's now going to be blue and da, da, da. And you just would save the day again and again and again. And I was always so, I had an altar made to you because you, no, you saved the show so many times and you were always like a big hero. And, you know, I would always sing your praises, but still it's kind of like, it's a job. It's kind of hard to point to, like you would prevent things from blowing up. You'd prevent disasters that you were like a safety officer. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And I just always relied on you to interpret Conan's notes too, because we'd be in rehearsal and Conan often would give notes very quickly or there were kind of, we'd go back and forth on something and you'd leave and be like, "Wait, where did we land on that? I don't know what he wanted." And I feel like John always knew, like yes. he was the Conan whisperer and he was like, yes. no, this was the one he wanted.
No, John was great at knowing. Well, no, that was, we were going to do that, but then we switched over to this, but then actually we ended up at, you know, point E and that's where we're at. It's point E. And yes, and you had great authority.
I think it's easier when you don't have skin in the game because everyone listens to the feedback based on,
oh, that's,
why did he want to cut that joke? That was my favorite.
That's interesting.
Or, you know, right. He's going in a direction that I didn't initially, but right. So it's easier for me to just hear it flat.
You were the one objective person out there on the floor.
That's
you're
true.
Right. And all the writers are like, yes, like maybe they were half listening because early on in the conversation, like something they loved just got cut. And so their brain is burning it. Like, God damn it. They're distracted a bit. Yeah, absolutely. That's a really interesting observation. You were just, yeah, totally nonplussed by all of it.
And at the end of Largo, that last show,
mm-hmm.
Conan kicked everyone out of his dressing room. And he said, "Everyone's got an angle. You know, everyone wants me to say this or do that. I'm just going to talk to you about what I want to say."
Oh, so just, this is right before the show.
Oh, the very last show. Yeah.
Right this before was, the very last show. He kicked like all the writers, everyone, producers, and it was just you and Conan in his dressing room. Yeah. So go ahead.
And just what you're saying, like, I don't think I had an angle or an agenda and he just wanted to talk it out. And
that's great.
And have me record it and sort of, so, and it was a great moment. It was a nice way to cap
That's
off.
Really nice but, way to end.
And that was such everything. A memorable speech he gave too.
Yeah.
His retirement speech. Ha ha.
Right.
LOL.
Ha ha. and so you made bullet point. And also you, like towards the last few years at TBS, all these crazy, you know, disasters or people dying or just some sort of calamity where Conan would have to kind of address it at the top of the show. And I think you'd often work with him on that as well, right? Just like working on the bullet points and...
Well, I didn't do much more than just facilitate what he was doing.
Right.
But I had a folder of tragedy addresses that he had done.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd kind of... sort of the rhythm of what's been done in the past. And then the most recent time, I can't remember what it was, That was what he said. He came out and he said, you know what dawned on me today? I met with the person who gives me my tragedy folder of things that I've said. Can you believe that that's the state that we're in?
Mm-hmm.
In
oh, wow. Country?
It was probably just, after another mass shooting.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
No.
So that was the telling part.
It was crazy the last 10 years of the show that how many times it was like you either don't do things were so bad, something so massive had happened that you just have to address it up top. And even that's hard because then you have to be like a 5-minute talk and then we'll be right back.
And now here's our sketch comedy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he'd usually just, I think, throw it a commercial and then come back and try to wipe the slate clean a little bit. But
we did shows in Texas on the road. And I think one of the new characters were two squirt guns, or it was some ridiculous, silly thing that had nothing to do with violence.
Right.
Was it the gay guns? was that not the bit that aired? Probably not.
I don't remember.
There was a mass shooting in Texas minutes after, not near us, but minutes after we finished taping. So we had to do a pickup in the theater and cut that part out of the show. It affected a lot of things often.
Yeah. We learned our lesson. No more gun humor.
Yeah, that's true.
That week.
No, if you look at late night, there were so many comedy bits involving guns. And then, yes.
Well, that was always our joke. If we didn't know how to end the sketch, it was like, oh, we'll pull out a gun and
kill the character, get a SWAT team in there, throw it a commercial.
I loved that job. I loved working with you all. But in terms of outside Conan, I went on the tour.
Right.
Right.
After the Tonight Show abruptly ended, Conan went on a live tour. And
legally prohibited from being on television tour.
Right. So
from
you went on that
funny
tour.
On television.
Oh, from being funny. Excuse me.
See how precise he is? Exactly.
Language matters.
Has to be the right words. Yes. Go ahead.
And there's so many, it's what a wild experience. You go into television and you work in late night and then you're living on a bus.
It's
something you'd never expect. And I've been watching Hacks, which was written by co-created and co-written by a former late night intern, Jen Statsky.
Oh,
she was an intern at late night?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so in this season, the characters are going on a comedy tour. And so it's been helping bring back all these memories. But being on the bus was a very cool experience. Mm-hmm. Reggie Watts, who of course went on to be the band leader at Corden, was on the buses with us. And I was on there with Blay. And
What was the atmosphere? Was it a party atmosphere? Were people just tired all the time? Was it like, I don't want to talk to anybody because we're here together all day, every day?
It got dark after a while. I mean, you really, it's 24 hours a day and it messes with your cycle. Like the show would be done and then everything would load up. It'd be 1:30 in the morning and dark and you'd go and sleep in a little coffin sized bed bunk. And then—
But you were actually sleeping on the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lived on the bus. And so
it would be driving from city to city. Like you do a show, get in the bus, climb up into your little coffin bed, pull the curtain shut, and wake up in the next town.
That's a hard pass for me.
Oh,
absolutely
really?
Absolutely not. Yeah, no.
I
not
love
doing that
sleeping
with coworkers.
I think I'm ready for the afterlife because I enjoyed the little coffin beds. I thought they were kind of cozy.
The worst part of your rhythm would be sometimes you'd wake up 4 floors underground in a dark parking deck of a casino. And so you had gone to bed at night, you pull the little curtain over and it's still pitch black. You're in a totally another city. You don't know what time it is. That was always the most disorienting thing. And so it was taxing in that way.
But then it's morning and then you just now have to work for the day.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and then do it all over again. But the casinos, I learned this I love this part with traveling with Conan, and I'm sure, Sweeney, you know more about this, that the casinos want the name there, mm-hmm. but they don't want people at the casino to go watch the show because right. they're not losing money
right.
at that time.
Right.
And so I remember the first casino show we had, there was Conan had one at like 9:30 and then one at midnight. And the casino owner was saying, okay, what's the show going to be? And he said, well, it's about an hour and a half. And he was like, it's going to be 40 minutes.
Aha.
And Conan said, well, I mean, these people paid, they want to come. Right. And he was like, no, you're not going over 40 minutes. Like, get them in, get them out. Right. I don't want people in here watching your stupid show.
I don't remember. That's hilarious. I don't remember cutting stuff from the casino shows, but we must have. You would know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Because and Conan did too.
Yeah.
And it would the midnight show would be weird people strolling
oh,
in.
Oh, I can't imagine.
There's
trying to wrap their head around a masturbating bear.
Right. No, there's nothing nothing worse than casino crowds because they're all a lot of them are comped. They're given the tickets for free.
They're absolutely wasted.
They're wasted. A lot of them are. So most of them weren't like, they're not there to see Conan. They're just like, oh, free show with the masturbating bear. I'll check it out. So they just come in and everyone had a quizzical look on their face. I mean, obviously there'd be a lot of fans in there, but it was different from every other venue was a theater and it was packed with rabid Conan fans. Except for the casinos. And it was very sobering. I think it was like, let's... I think he was probably happy to only do 40 minutes, you know, in hindsight.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the rabid fans, these big theaters, they're packed. And of course, Robert Smigel has come up a lot on this podcast. Right. And he's the voice and puppeteer of Triumph, the Insult Comic Dog. And before the tour, Aaron Blayart went to Robert's hotel room and they filmed a thing where Triumph would say, hello, welcome to, you know, I'm happy to be in
right.
blank. And then he'd insert it, you know, Jersey City.
Mm-hmm.
You guys sure eat a lot of pizza or right. whatever.
Or whatever the local dish is.
Yeah.
Oh, we had to do those every day for every town. I remember it was like, you know what? This show's written. This going on tour is going to be a snap. And then it was like, we wrote all local commercials for every town, like making kind of, we'd find out like kind of the
quirky landmarks.
Quirky mm-hmm. landmarks that everyone in that town knew about. And we'd write an ad for it and Andy would read it. But so we were banging out new stuff almost every day. Plus Triumph would have new lines for every town we're in. So that those two things, I feel like kept you really busy probably, right? You couldn't just relax on that tour.
There was no relaxing. No. It was loading in. And I mean, that was cool to get to see the inside of these arenas and theaters. Mm-hmm. You'd show up and there'd be a basketball court on the floor and you'd watch them take the court up and put the stage down. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's so weird.
Or like romantic.
Hockey ice. Yeah.
Yeah. And the tour manager, Gus, he manages the tour for the Foo Fighters principally. And, There's lore that he is the person that put the green M&Ms in the tour rider, which is often cited as rock stars being greedy and vain.
Yeah.
But his point is that it's a 50-page document with lots of safety issues in it.
Right.
Like, what do we do when it rains and you're outside with a mic in the water, all these things. And so he says, if you show up and they didn't do the simple stuff like the green M&Ms, then they didn't read the
document. That's kind of a test.
So you have to worry about the trussing and the safety thing.
Right. Right. Oh. It was all a ruse.
Well, that seems reasonable.
It's very reasonable.
And
the wire is fascinating. If you go to smokinggun.com, you can see, I don't know if that website's still around. Yeah. You can Google one of the riders. And is Google still around? You can do an internet search of one of the riders. And it's fascinating. I didn't know before going on tour, you really don't have a life and you don't have any opportunity to shop or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's every single day. And so it would say if your town is hosting the Wednesday show, then you have to provide 14 pairs of socks. And if it's the Thursday show, you have to provide 10 new DVDs for them to watch on the bus. And we've already seen these DVDs.
Oh.
And if it's and it seems silly, but then once you're in it, once you're doing it, you're like, I don't have a chance to go out and mm-hmm. buy socks. And I've seen every piece of entertainment there is. And if you're Foo Fighters and you're doing it for 18 months in a row, I mean,
right.
You
Saturday is the new Valtrex supply.
Yeah. There was one fun experience on the bus.
Yeah.
That took us a few years to figure out where there was a clipboard with just lines on it. And it took us days until one of the roadies told us what it was. You could write anything on the board, on this clipboard. And when you got back on the bus at the end of the show, at like 1 a.m, whatever you wrote on there would be on the bus.
Oh.
And we were like, this seems like a trick. And so the first day we started with red vines. That was Scott, the costume and wardrober was like, let's just try it. And then there were red vines. And
step then, in gingerly with red vines.
Yeah. A couple of days later, my belt broke and I put that in. And then by the end, it was like, I don't know, we want Patron, 10 bags of ice.
We want our own individual buses.
Yeah. That's inside the bus.
And no one ever said no, it just showed up.
Yes, it was never questioned. Because
I love that.
You realize you'd given your life over to this. You know, at first it was like, well, I don't want to be greedy or something. You're like, no, I deserve this.
Like, I genuinely do need the toothpaste. Yeah.
Where's the fucking Patron? It's breakfast.
Well, John, thank you so much for all of your great stories and for coming so prepared.
Yes, thank you.
I had a great time. It's nice to be on. And
it's really nice
ever
to
since
see
I was
you.
Invited, it's been fun to have all these memories and want to share them.
Oh, and you know what? I want to give a shout out to your new job, which
I know.
It seems like a really cool job. You're producing the Howard Stern wrap-up show.
Yeah, that's right. The Conan show wrapped up and a position came over on the Howard Stern channels. And I was excited to do that. I was always a fan of Howard when I lived on the East Coast. And the day I signed my paperwork and started at Sirius XM was the same exact day that Team Coco announced their
that
they were becoming part of the SXM family.
Yeah.
Wow. So you were like, I can't shake these guys.
I can't.
They're
on
my tail.
Yeah.
And it's been great. I've had such fun experiences. I was working in the New York offices and the Team Coco group was there. And Ruthie, who people know from the travel shows, came running into my office and she said, you know, I just don't understand. We are doing this on a Tuesday and if they're going to fly us out on a Wednesday. And then she took a beat and looked at me and said, I totally forgot we don't work together anymore. I'm sorry. And turned around and walked away. There was just these relationships for years and years and years that just...
That's great.
That continue. It's great.
Yeah. Well, that's so cool.
It was fun to see you in your corner office in the Time Life building.
Well, it helped me because last month Conan came in again. Y'all weren't there. And he came into my office and he said, I want to show you a trailer that hasn't been released yet.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And when Conan comes into your office at SiriusXM, it gives you... I got a little bit of cred for a day or two around there. It was nice.
Oh, that's excellent. Great.
Oh, he showed you the trailer for the Mac
show. For the travel show, yeah.
I thought it was for this movie he did a part in.
Oh. Yeah, which trailer?
Right.
Don't worry, it was the wrong edit. It was still...
Oh, okay. One cut. So you had notes.
Right, great.
Well, thank you so much, John. It's great to see
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, John. Thanks again to Sam and John for joining us. You had two-header today. We know that, I guess it's a double-header. We know there wasn't a listener question. I'm sorry. But if you do have one, we'd love to hear it. So give us a call at 323-209-1079, or you can email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
And if you like the show, and we hope you do, that's why we're doing this. You can support us by rating Inside Conan, an Important Hollywood Podcast, on iTunes and leaving us a review. Mm-hmm. And what else am I forgetting?
I think it's time to review your emotions.
That's right. I give it 5 stars and a we love you. Inside Conan, an Important Hollywood Podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Mm-hmm. Our producer is Lisa Burr.
Team Coco's executive producers are Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Nick Liao.
Engineered and mixed by Joanna Samuel.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis, with assistance from Maddie Ogden.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan, or an enemy, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Put on your hat, it's the Conan Show. Try on some spats, you're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf, it's Conan!
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.